here with the whole she said she was doing as well. I think so. She just by one way.
Okay, the first question I've got is how you guys met, and I mean all you guys, filmmaker and cast included this time. Then we'll get into the specifics of how Ruthie and Connie met. But talk about how this film comes about.
Well, do you want to hold it? I met Ruthie and Connie through Donald Goldmacher, who is our producer. He grew up across the street from Ruthie. His older sister Sheila was Ruthie's best childhood friend, and he grew up across the street, and Ruthie was like another older sister, and Ruthie's mother and Bubby were like desired mothers and Bubbies, and he spent a lot of time, I think, at Ruthie's house, and then grew up and became a psychiatrist, but always wanted to do a film, and always knew that Ruthie and Connie's story would make a fantastic film. And then the co-producer at the time was Linda Hansen, and she found me. We knew each other, and I became part of the team.
Okay, I'll put it right here, and you can just talk into it.
Okay, for me, I knew Donald ever since he was a little boy, and I was adopted that family because I was an only child. And many years later, when Donald already lived in San Francisco and was established as a psychiatrist, he came to visit Connie and I, and he wanted to photograph my life. To do video on my life. And so we went around the neighborhood where we were brought up and the schools that we went to, and we chatted, and he took some film. What proceeded after he went home was a number of months later, there was a fire in Marin County, and his place where he lived burned down, and so did everything else, including the videos that he had taped. But he looked at it in a positive way, and he said, well, I really have to do the Ruthie and Connie story. And the reason for that one of the reasons was because we fit a lot of his political thinking. Aside from our being lesbians, we also were middle class women who had been part of a lawsuit that won domestic partnership rights for medical and dental plan for all New York City employees with two other couples, so that was another reason, and because we were also Jewish and still went out there and was very active in our communities and in many ways, and our story interested him in a political way, and so he wanted to do it.
Well, just to continue the sharing is that why not make a movie of two ordinary women who, as Donald would put it, have done extraordinary things. Certainly the lawsuit really speaks out to doing something extraordinary, but this is not unfamiliar to Ruthie and I. To march on City Hall, to have a consciousness around, in order to have change, you have to make change. You have to make your demands known. So he recognized that throughout our relationship, because our relationship spans 43 years of a friendship, and certainly 27 years as an in-love affair, and he knew the material was important to get out to the many communities that we represent. So here we are.
Okay, my first question for you guys is, when did you first meet? Can you describe the first day when you two met and what your lives had been like briefly up till that point, and what your first relationship was when you were both married and everything, going back, I guess, to 1959?
At the ripe old age of 20 and 9 months old, I got married. Simple, you know, mathematical issues that I knew that before I was 21, I was supposed to be married. And we moved, Bernie and I moved to Dayhu Road, and regular, you know, working, going to the mailbox, getting mail, making dinners, the things that couples do. And one of those usual days of going to the mailbox, I met, or at least said hello, nodded to this woman who was also at the mailbox. And it was very clear that we had moved into a building, at that time was Dayhu Road, that had the young couples, had a carriage brigade, and at that time, unbeknownst to me, I was already pregnant with my first child within a month of my being married. And Ruthie, who was in fact that woman I said hello to at the mailbox, she was pregnant with her second child and lived on the, I think, the third floor, and I lived on the second floor. But the point was that within a nine-month period, I also was part of the carriage brigade. And we would meet and walk on Bay Parkway and go to John's Bargain store and get the bargains that lasted, the socks lasted one day of wearing, but it was a decent price, so one needed to buy that. And so our life went on as married women, having children, Ruthie having two, I having one at the time. We exchanged babysitting. We had neighbor gatherings. And we then moved. Ruthie found out about, with her husband, found out about a co-op called Cotello Towers, showed Bernie and I the brochure, and Ruthie moved in to her three-bedroom apartment, and Bernie and I at the time moved into our one-bedroom apartment. I only had one child. I then had my second child, and I was entitled to three bedrooms because I had a boy and a girl. And life went on, buying carpeting, getting the dining room set, and should we carpet or should we tile the living room floor? Those were our big problems. We had other big problems, such as which Jewish organization should we participate in, Women's American Ort or Hadassah or B'nai B'rith. And Women's American Ort became part of our lives in the community. We then recognized the importance of getting a traffic light, because now we were a community of many, many families, and we were not safe crossing the street. So we marched on City Hall for a traffic light. And Ruthie and I were at the forefront. As two friends, consciously aware of what the neighborhood needed, we gathered the community, marched on City Hall. We needed a junior high school. Well, you march on City Hall again. What's the big deal? The park, which existed, the Dreyer Hoffman Park existed. Well, it should be a place for a nursery. Well, what do you do? Well, you go and you march on City Hall again. I mean, what's no big deal? And on and on. We were very supportive of one another. We also knew that we needed a synagogue. We needed a place that as Jews in the community, we needed a place that would satisfy our needs. And I claim, Ruthie challenges me, I claim I'm the one that made the motion and she's the one that seconded it. She thinks she made the motion, but I'm not, I don't think so. And it's been that kind of partnership, and it was for 14 years of our living in Cantello Towers, my living in Cantello. And in 1970, I moved to Israel with my husband and my two children. Mark was 10 years old and Eileen was 12 years old. And I went off to Israel, saying goodbye to a community that served me well and I served well. And that was much of the storyline and much of how we were affected by the separation.
Right up, were you like, what was your first impression?
I was very busy with two children 14 months apart. And I enjoyed my role as a mother and wife and neighbor, and it was a wonderful time living in Day Hill Road, because the majority of couples living there were young couples who were all starting their families, so we had a very nice time, very nice social time. And every morning the superintendent would bring up the 11 or 12 coach carriages at that time, and whoever came down at a particular hour, I was out. By 10:30, I had to be out. I prepared lunch. I did everything. I had a seat for my son on top, and my baby daughter was on in the coach, and I left the house. I had to leave the house and do my thing in the streets, and Connie sometimes came along, sometimes didn't. Or we sat in front, all the carriages lined up with chairs and our kids hanging out from the carriages, and it was very pleasant. There was no thought of having any kind of relationship other than the relationships I was already in, which was mother and wife. And that's what I enjoyed doing at the time. When we moved to Cantello Towers, because there was a need for a larger apartment, then the outside activities began, and I joined with Connie Women's American Art, American Jewish Congress. I also had my third in Cantello. I had another child, and we were just very busy. It was a busy community. At that time, our children who did go to school were bused, so we had to get up very early in the morning, make sure they got out. There's a lot of socializing during the course of the day, but I think I kept to myself a lot, would you say?
I would say.
And then Connie and I spent many evenings together. We always clicked, because I was the initiator of, she talks about the lights and the synagogue and everything. I initiated what was called Mother's Action Committee of Cantello 1, 2, and 3. I knew that numbers made a difference to politicians, not because they heard what the people wanted, but they heard that these people, if I give them what they want, they'll vote for me. So I knew that. So we did accomplish a great deal in that respect. And then Connie went to live in Israel because I was a Zionist. And so it was after, when she left, there was a missing, but I was already back at work. I went back to teaching. I worked near my home, which was very convenient, so that the children would not be alone. Somebody would see them off to school, and my husband would see them coming off the bus. I would see them on the bus. I became a chairman, an acting chairman of a brand new department where I could really be very creative in my field, extraordinary. I could do whatever I wanted, and it was really a wonderful accomplishment. It was like having a fourth baby. And I designed the first co-ed school, co-ed health and phys ed department in the country, totally co-ed plus mainstreaming special ed kids. And it was at that time Connie went to live in Israel, and then she came back for a visit. And when she came back for a visit, I said to myself, this is my best friend, and I'm going to be with her. I also had another talk with myself, and I said, myself, you're going to be 40 years old, you're going to let everything hang out. All the things that you do in educating other people, you have to now take them on as changes for yourself. I didn't know it was going to be such a quantum leap in my life.
Let's talk about that when the relationship changes. Let's talk about that.
Well, that's what we're getting to. That's what we're getting to. It's like serendipity. When I said to myself, I'm going to let everything hang out, I came home that day. I was teaching a course at Brooklyn College. Young people were really getting a lot out of it. And it was a mental health course. And I said, I'm going to let everything hang out. And I come home, and my husband at the time says, Our friend Ruth called, and I get on the phone, and Ruth, this third friend, says to me, Connie is coming in for a visit. And I felt joy. I could not identify that joy. But what I did with the joy was to say, she's my friend, she's coming in for a visit, I'm going to spend as much time with her as possible, knowing that I was working. And that's what I did. I got a Polaroid camera, and I followed her around the neighborhood because she was very popular in the neighborhood as this activist. So when she came back, this one wanted to have her for breakfast. This one wanted to have her and Bernie for lunch. This for dinner. And I popped in, took my little pictures, and popped out. Prior to that, when she did get off the plane, it was a time where she was going to leave. She was just going to come, say hello, and she and her husband were leaving for Florida to visit her parents. I was going away for the weekend. When we both came back, we spent a 24-hour period together just talking and crying. I cannot believe the kind of discharging I did in sharing. Right. I went up to her in one of her places where she was going to see the, what was that show?
All in the Family.
All in the Family. She had never seen All in the Family in Israel, and a friend of hers told her it was just like her father. So she had to go see him. So she's seeing All in the Family, and I went upstairs. The co-op was like what? How many stories?
16
stories with 10 families on a story. So on this 10th floor was a dear friend who since passed away, Seal, and her husband. And I went and I said to Connie, I have to talk to you. I didn't know what I was going to talk about, but I had like I was driven to say that. I said, you'll come downstairs. I have to go to work tomorrow. We'll talk for 20 minutes. I'm putting the timer on the oven, and when it goes off, you have to leave because I have to go to sleep. Well, it went off, and my ex-husband went to work. He was still my husband. My kids went to school. We were still talking in the living room, just talking. And I hadn't been in therapy, so I really was not aware of something going on for me until we went to see a play. I was doing graduate work at NYU, and two professors got together. One was teaching sex education and marriage, and the other was teaching my course in administration, and he said he needed people to go to this play, this off-Broadway play called Let My People Come. It was one of the first plays that dealt with all kinds of sexuality and nakedness. It made a bit, I think the playwright is a famous playwright, I don't remember. But there was a scene there. I invited Connie and our friend Ruth. There was a scene there, a lesbian scene. Now, it wasn't with two women. It was just one. Maybe that's where I got the red gown from.
Exactly. I made that good. But go ahead.
It was just one woman. Did you see the play?
No, but
in a red gown.
I knew from your story when you talked about the red, the next thing you're going to tell him, I made the connection.
I'm just making the connection right now.
Okay.
This woman is on a sort of a pedestal, and she's wearing this gorgeous red gown, and she starts to, what was very poetic, I think it was a song, and it turns out she's a lesbian. And it was at that moment that I felt an identification in my relationship with Connie, and I think I held her hand, or I touched her in the back. And the next morning at work, I heard in my head the song, the love story, She Fills My Heart. And I just felt very drawn to be with her. We spent a great deal of time together and talking. And in the car, coming back from a visit to another mutual friend, she touches my hand and she's, and I don't remember what I said, but I remember what she said. She said, I think we've made love, Ruth Berman. She always called me Ruth Berman. Because there was another Ruth in our lives. And it was like so ethereal. The whole thing was not, I wasn't present the way, I wasn't physically present or consciously present in my life in those weeks that we were beginning our relationship. And maybe it was because I needed to separate so totally from my life in order to go towards Connie. I really think it was very spiritual, very spiritual. And then one night, and in the movie you hear that part of the story, and that was, I get into this red negligee. That was so good, Deborah.
I know, I just didn't get it.
And we're sitting apart. We're sitting apart. She was over there in a club chair, and I take her hands, and I asked her to kiss me, and that was it. That was it.
It was not only that was it. I have to go back to Israel. And I'm there longer than in the United States, longer than I had planned, because I had been invited to speak at a UJA breakfast. After all, I went through the Yom Kippur War. What better speaker to have in the community where I was so acknowledged and recognized than for Connie to be the speaker. So I had stayed in the United States 2 weeks longer to do that, and Bernie went back to Israel. And the fact that Ruthie, in her sharing, says, and that was it, it was a very, very big it, to say the least. And yet, I was fine in the way of acknowledging, oh, that's the it that I had thought about, I had never understood what was going on with me as a younger person. Why did I always feel different? And So when Ruthie was as aggressive as she was, though I may have been in shock, I think I was more in shock because of Ruthie, this friend of so many years, who for the first time showed the emotional side of herself, showed the love and the caring, which I had never experienced. Ruthie already shares with you in the audience that she was distant, that her priorities were being a wife and being a mother, and certainly her career was very important to her. And I was gone. I had been living in Israel already close to 3 years, more than 3 years already. So I had never seen Ruthie in that way before, that she went beyond the friendship. Certainly when she asked me to kiss her, it was, you know, like a wow kind of thing, and yet it was a why not kind of thing as well. And I returned to Israel 3 days later. I returned to Israel. I spoke at the UJA breakfast. I returned to Israel with a very clear knowledge that this friend, who I was very devoted to as a friend, now my devotion became intimate, it was sexual, and I no longer could avoid who I was. And not that I knew that I was avoiding before. I really had no knowledge of me, the woman that I am, the sexual woman that I am. I think I took stupid pills. And they worked well. And the fact that I experienced myself with Ruth in such a intimate, passionate, lustful way, I was not going to lose that anymore. I went back to Israel. Bernie met me at the airport. We went home. I was, in fact, sexual with Bernie when I got home. And in the morning, when I woke up, I told Bernie I was returning to the United States. I could not be any clearer with him because I didn't know what clarity I needed to be, other than I no longer could stay in Israel. And this went on. We talked, but it was clear that I couldn't negotiate it anymore. And but what did happen during about a 7 month period, Ruthie and I began to write to one another. There were letters, intimate letters, and I would save the letters, and then there were phone calls at specific times. It was a heightened relationship, very clandestine, very romantic, but who the hell needed it? It was so crazy making and so stressful. I was off the wall. I'm 6,000 miles away. I've never experienced myself outside of my relationship with Bernie. I knew nothing about, as I understood it with Ruth, my body and being sexual. And here I'm going through such an upheaval. And I returned, and my husband wanted to come back with me, and certainly my children had to come back because I'm their parent. And we came back to the United States in December, and by February I separated from Bernie, And by July, my children and Bernie returned to Israel. I no longer could jump from one relationship to another. And I didn't know, I didn't have the intelligence of knowing, could I do both relationships? And I'm not sure how to identify it. Was it intelligence? Would I ever want a relationship like that? It's hard to know. It's so many years ago, and I'm not the same person anymore. I no longer take stupid pills. And in a very short time, I began to get a little bit more intelligent about who I am and what I am and what I need for myself. And we came together, Ruthie and I, Ruthie having a lot of difficulty. A lot of difficulty, which was not easy for me, because I was so clear. It wasn't clear black and white, where there were no grays. It was clear of, I was where I was supposed to be, and where I should be. That kind of clarity. I was healthier, though with a great deal of stress. I felt healthier. I felt that even though I acknowledge my selfishness, even though I acknowledge at times being totally irresponsible to what I was supposed to be responsible for, such as my children and my husband, I can't apologize enough for it. I can't be sorry enough for it. I could also add guilt to that list, but it wouldn't serve me well, and it certainly wouldn't serve my family, especially at this point after so many years. So I have acknowledged that to my children. I acknowledged it to Bernie. And they have their complete life, and hopefully Bernie has his complete life, and I certainly feel more whole and complete than I ever have in my whole entire life. But Ruthie has, it was not easy for Ruthie, and at times it was a strain on the relationship, but that's the pride I think I have in the relationship. That we could have the kind of stress that we had and still maintain a sense of the importance of who we were to one another, not only in an in-love affair, but in an emotional, compassionate way that we were towards one another.
And Ruthie, why don't you explain the dilemmas you had in that relationship involved?
It's not easy to go back there, not because it's uncomfortable, but because I say, my God, why did I waste so much time? Why did I beat myself up? Why did I feel such guilt and shame and embarrassment over loving someone of the same sex? And I think that's one of the reasons why I am so active in the lesbian and gay community. To work towards our full civil and human rights is... I had a case of internalized homophobia that was directly related to a physical illness I had. Being in the closet, I was a sick person, physically sick. I had joint pain. I had symptoms that I went to orthopedists, to chiropractors, to internists, to hospitals, to wherever, and they all gave me different names for it. It wasn't until Connie and I came out. Now, why didn't I come out? I came from a Jewish Orthodox background. I was an only child, a handicapped widowed mother. My bubby, who was Orthodox, lived with us. I was in the forefront in my community. I was in a new position at work as a administrator in a new school. I loved my husband. I loved my children. And I was in love and swept away by my feelings with Connie. And then I find out I'm a lesbian. My husband calls me a lesbian. I wanted to die. I wanted the earth to open up and for me to die. This was a terrible thing for me to be. There was no positive images of lesbians or gay people. They were hidden in Greenwich Village. I read The Well of Loneliness. It didn't turn out so well. It didn't turn out like the Ruthie and Connie, every room in the house. So I was a wreck. I was a total wreck, filled with guilt, because at that time, in the early 70s, to own up to being a lesbian in a divorce, I would not have be able to even see my children, let alone have custody. I didn't want to leave them, but the only course that I could take, except to sue my husband for cruel and inhuman treatment, when this was a nice Jewish boy. This was not someone who was cruel and inhuman. It was terrible. I didn't even have any idea of a way out, except to be the one that takes the way out and just and leaves and becomes that divorced parent. It was terrible. It was terrible. And I am so grateful to Connie for being there for me in those terrible times. She was my friend in those times. When she was my lover, she said, You better start moving out of here. Move out of this closet. This closet's not going to work for us. I'm not paraphrasing even. She was right. And I knew she was right. And I had to take those steps. And in taking those steps, I was in the hospital for 21 days. They finally diagnosed, after years of being ill, two ways that my illness was diagnosed. One was the physical way, it was called Crohn's disease, and one, it was the psychogenic way, which my mentor gave me, which was self-subordination. When I heard the word self-subordination, I could see that bulb, that light bulb was there, and I said, that's it. I am not going to remain in the closet, and I'm going to take steps, as difficult as it may be, because I denied it to my children when they asked me. I denied it to my mother when she said, has it gone to the bedroom? I kept denying it. In the movie, you see, we have two plaques, Ruth's room and Connie's room. They were up. You saw them off. They were up on the rooms. When we left our apartment, in fact, when I took the lease for the apartment, I could not sleep until I went to see the renter and I said, if I break this lease right now, will it be all right, or do I have, I was naive, do I have to pay all that rent? I was ready to break the lease. I went back to my husband three times. It wasn't until Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, I knew that I had to make a decision. I knew that I couldn't hold him up. I went into therapy. The therapist said, you're holding up two people, their lives. Oh, this is a good one. This is a good story. I had a wonderful therapist. She would listen week after week after week to the same thing. Stay with Saul, go with Connie. Stay with Saul, go with Connie. She said, you're holding up two people's lives. Why is it you cannot make a decision? And I allowed myself the first thought that came to my head. And I said, I wouldn't walk my daughter down the aisle. That's a very Jewish thing, to walk your daughter down the aisle, you know. And this brilliant, Freudian, close to 80 female therapist says to me, what if your daughter never gets married? What if your daughter elopes? And then I knew, it's my life. It's my decision. And that's how I decided I'm going with Connie. But I vacillated. I vacillated. Came just before, during Yom Kippur, I said, I can't pain this man any longer by saying, come back, I'm going to go back, we're going to go back. So I took a very deep breath, and I met him, and I said, Saul, it's over. I can't do it. And that was it. Went to live with Connie. Made sure when we left the house, she was three paces in front, never in back, because I knew she would catch up and pinch my tuchus. We would go to bus stops and kiss goodbye and go on the same bus. We would go to, when we went shopping in the ladies in the, you know, the dressing room, we would hug and kiss. But gradually I came out when I got those invitations to a bar bat mitzvah with only my name. I would call up and say, you know, Connie is in my life the way your husband is in yours. And it was a process. I was very lucky because the school I was in, well, my ex-husband told everybody, in his pain, to alleviate his pain, I believe he had to share it with everyone. So we were in the same field, so it's a small world in the teaching profession. Everybody knew what was going on in our community and in my profession, that some colleagues came to me, had lunch with me, and shared that they were also gay and lesbian. And so I felt that I had people who knew and were my allies where I was working, which was very nice. And just got angrier and angrier the more I knew the kind of pain that gay and lesbians were going through in their lives and their separation from their families and all this. And our activism came right away because we knew we had to participate in the community. So we were involved immediately with the Coalition for Lesbian and Gay Rights, the now New York State Lesbian Rights Chairs we became, and then the lawsuit came up. But before the lawsuit came up, I used to go to my payroll clerks. When I was in the closet, I would go and ask for another change in health plan. And then a clerk would say, I can't do it. I was happy because I wouldn't have to come out again. But then I said to one clerk, I said, I want the application. And I filled it out. And it was, again, a serendipity thing. Lambda called us and asked us if we would participate with two other couples in this lawsuit for the domestic partnership rights of the medical and dental plan of teachers, and we won. And it was right to win. It was discrimination. And so I'm healed from this Crohn's, by the way, in many different ways. If anybody's interested, I will share how I did. RuthieandConnie.com. I will share with you what my process was, and hopefully I could help other people, not necessarily gays or lesbians, but people who are suffering from Crohn's and can help themselves. So that's it. That's it. I want to right the wrongs, and the wrongs have to do with the oppression of women, the oppression of gays, lesbians, bis, and transgender people, the racism in this country, the sexism, the ageism, about poor people? What's that? Ableism?
Classism.
God, yes, we have a lot of classism here. And we have it a lot here in San Francisco. A lot. Not with that, we don't have it in New York. I don't feel it as much in New York as I do here. I would like you to hear from you.
Deborah, why don't you talk about framing the film, these wonderful stories. How did you set about, what was your dilemmas in framing it?
Well, I started out wanting, first of all, as you know, you can't tell, even the way they've just told that story, that was way too long for the film. I had to constantly edit the story and just take little moments of it, which doesn't, you know, at all deal with the complexity that you've just heard. And what I had two thoughts. One, that we all share this feeling that, number one, the film was, well, first of all, it's just a great love story. So that was
a given that that was going to be a great story. Secondly, you know, the political message really is that, you know, and it's not just about sexuality, it's not just, you know, it's about people can't tolerate otherness, you know, and I think it's at the root of all the problems we have in the world today. So, first of all, we wanted to make a film for a straight audience to see these two, I wouldn't use the word ordinary, ever. These two regular, oh, maybe that's wrong too.
Don't use normal.
These two down-to-earth, ordinary women who anyone can relate to as like, oh my God, she's just like my next door neighbor, she's like my mother, she's like my aunt, or she's like my sister. And they just happen to be lesbians. So, you know, you kind of love them, and then you start to factor in, oh, hmm. And then the other audience was the gay and lesbian audience, in terms of what Ruthie's just been talking about, how important it is not to be in the closet and to accept who you are. And I would be interested in hearing, I think it'd be a great question for a Q&A, whether audiences, how they're responding to that, you know? But again, I had like 50 hours of footage. And not only that, but you can't, unlike a radio show, you can't just have 60 minutes of nonstop talking. You know, you need breaks. And of course, the film is full of laughter and tears. You know, it was the highest compliment when people come up and say, oh, I laughed, and then I cried, and then I laughed, and then I cried. So it was, but it was finding, first of all, a narrative arc, because it's all about storytelling for me. You know, I'm not out to make a journalistic film. And one of the problems was the drama of their story was all in the past. And I didn't want to just have a film of interviews. So we tried to have scenes so that things would evolve, you know. And it's always more fun, I think, when you have people interacting, and like the scene with their friends from Cantello, and they start to tell the story, and a lot of the same stuff starts to come up. It's like group dynamics, you know. And so it was a matter of, I wanted to start the story with, they did all the regular things. They got married, they're looking at their photo albums, it's like, look at this dress, and wasn't that gorgeous? And then, as Connie would so eloquently put it, the shit hit the fan. That you have, you set up this perfect world where they're both good Jewish girls married to, you know, young women married to nice Jewish men with perfect, lovely Jewish children, and they're active and they have friends and they're having a wonderful life, and then this kiss like rocks their worlds. And of course the other thing is that it rocked the worlds of their families in a very big way. And I felt that the other thing that I really love about Ruthie and Connie's story is that, and I think this is a story that everyone again can relate to, no matter, you know, what, who you are, is that they paid a really big price to be themselves. People shouldn't have to pay such a big price to be who they are. But because society says there's just one way of, you know, living your life, and if what you want and who you are doesn't fit that, it can be very, very painful and difficult, which I think, you know, both of them had to experience estrangement from children and stuff like that, which is huge.
Let me ask the final questions. Why don't we ask both of you how your families reacted to this whole wonderful story for you, and not necessarily for them, that you just told. What was the reaction of Connie and Ruth's families?
At the time?
Yeah, at the time, and then as it evolved.
Mark was 10 years old at the time, and you may hear me call him Moshe, because that is his Hebrew name. And Eileen, my daughter, was at the time 12 years old. And the most difficult part was when, in fact, Bernie, on July 14th, 1974, 75, returned to Israel with Eileen and Mark. Though it was a relief for me that they chose to go with their father, it certainly was painful to separate. Today, my recognizing, it is not the best thing in the world for me to acknowledge, but certainly they left going with their father, a good father, a good parent. There was no question about it. In the film, I share how I viewed myself, that I was not a good parent. And I've been challenged so many times by people because they just don't like when I say that, but that it has to be named, and I was willing to name it. I was not a good parent. And my children responded to it. Not their biggest pain was that I separated from their father, and that certainly in the very near future, in 1975, I divorced him. When my children live in Israel, and when I visit Israel, I usually stay with Eileen because she is not Dati, she's not religious, and I have a more of a freedom of movement. There was a time when I wanted to visit with Moshe because I was staying such a short time. Ruthie was with me, and I said, Moshe, how would you feel if Ruthie and I stayed with you? And if I left out anything about who Moshe is Hasidic. Moshe is an extremely religious Jewish man with his wife Rachel. At this point in 2002, he has 11 children. And when I visited them with Ruth, I think at the time he had about 5 children, and I said, Moshe, how would you feel if we stayed with you? And his answer to me was, you would be our honored guest. I'm giving you 10 seconds just to take a deep breath, because nobody has an image that Moshe or his clan would even respond that way, but Moshe did. In fact, he took out the many children he had at the time out of their bedroom, and Moshe gave us, Ruthie and I, a bedroom of our own. Moshe has tears, and we have shared those. I'm going to cry. Shush. Moshe has his tears, and he has shared them. But his tears are really tears of the divorce and the separation. I'm able to talk to Moshe about my synagogue, Congregation Beit Simchas Torah. He will ask me, where am I spending the holidays? When I come to visit him in Israel, the announcement is the Lebanese are coming. His English is not the best. We have a wonderful sense of humor. He will ask for Ruthie. He will extend Shabbat Shalom to Ruthie. He's a mensch. He's a decent human being. Eileen, my daughter, made sure when she was dating that the man that she was dating 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, that man knew that she had two mothers. So when you ask me, how are my children, they're decent human beings. That's how they are. And I am the recipient of their decency, and Ruthie is the recipient of their decency, and rightly so.
I think that my denial and my ex-husband's difficulty in sharing it in a negative way with my children had an effect. That still there's a thread of that effect. I have three descendants, grown children. I don't call them children. I wish people wouldn't call 40 and plus children, because they are my descendants. When I call them children, I want to take care of them. I want to give them money. You know, it that has to stop at some point. So my denial, and not really being upfront with them at the beginning, still has a thread of difficulty. And at the time, I think my oldest son worked on his identity, and when his identity was clear to him, he was okay with his mother. And he recognizes today that he still has some homophobia. He doesn't really want to see the film, although he may talk about it, but, you know, he's reticent. My daughter is, we had mother-daughter difficulties. That was a usual kind of thing, and I think we've resolved it. And then there was a time where my youngest son, who didn't want to speak to me anymore, and was getting married. It's a whole long story. I don't feel like going through it because it's just too complicated at this point. What happened was, my three children, when my oldest son got married, he invited, it was easy, Connie was there. When my daughter got married, Connie was there. When my youngest son got married, he didn't want Connie to come. He has difficulty with my being a lesbian. And so I only went to the service that he had, and I didn't stay for the party because I would be alone. I had no family there or anything. So my daughter took on the banner, and for a number of years, what was it, 3 years? I don't know, whatever. She didn't speak to me. She had a kid. She spoke to me, didn't want to speak to Connie. She had a second kid. She spoke to Connie. We got together. Connie and she had time to iron things out. And so this family comings together, you know. My ex-husband, forget about it. He gets the Homophobe of the Year award. And you know, what can I tell you? It's 27 years, and there's no movement. But listen, a lot of people are constipated with a lot of things, not only with their attitudes and behavior towards gays and lesbians. My younger son, I try to, as I said in the film, it's really something the way what I believe. And that is that I brought my children to a place to be their creative selves. I gave them, I opened their closet door. Hopefully that the closet that parents may give children of guilt, of you owe me or whatever, my children don't have that and can, you know, reach out into the world. I hope it's that way. There is, you know, we have, I don't want necessarily to be limited in ways. You know, I've heard so often people say, you know, they love family, they want to have family, the family's coming over for Christmas, for Hanukkah, for whatever, and they dread it. They can't wait till it's over, you know? So what's all the whole thing of how are the children, how are the descendants, you know? We have a life. We have nice things going on. We have, you know, that kind of, that's where my privacy comes in. My privacy, my personal life with Connie is out there. And then we have a personal life that we are surrounded with our family that I like is private. I like that it isn't out there. That I can enjoy my grandchildren as a grandmother, not as this this lesbian activist, you know. I really enjoy just playing sorry. And my little granddaughter can get on her knees and take me around during we're playing sorry, and she'll say, you know, yeah, that's Greek for grandma. Connie told me to take care of you.